I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now it's time for our Wisdom Watch conversation. That's the part of the program where we speak with those who've made a difference through their work. Today we have with us Olympic gold medalist Dominique Dawes. She is the first African-American woman to win an individual medal in gymnastics at the Olympic Games that happened in 1996 in Atlanta. And she's the only African-American with an Olympic gold medal in the sport. After devoting 18 years to gymnastics, she retired, then worked on Broadway and in television news. In 2010, President Obama appointed her as co-chair of the President's Council on Fitness, Sports, and Nutrition. Dominique Dawes was kind enough to stop by our studios here in Washington, D.C. recently after she gave a talk to raise awareness about diabetes at Howard University. The disease affects more than 25 million Americans, including some members of her own family. Dominique Dawes, welcome. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I understand that you don't suffer from diabetes yourself, but members of your family do. Is that how you got interested in the subject?
Well, I've been interested in health advocacy for so many years. I've been retired from the sport for 11 years, and much of that time has been focusing on combating childhood obesity, educating women on cardiovascular disease, and then I just teamed up recently with Sweet and Low to raise awareness to diabetes. And as you mentioned, I was at Howard University, and I was there to educate and empower people on taking more control of their actual health.
Why do you think diabetes is so prevalent in this country right now? And it certainly does affect different groups disproportionately. I mean, we keep focusing on, you know, the ethnic aspect of it, in part because members of so-called ethnic minority groups like African-Americans, Latinos, and Native Americans are more likely to have diabetes than the general population. Why is that?
Well, type 2 diabetes, many times there's an onset because of lifestyle choices. It has to do with living a sedentary lifestyle or having a poor diet or an excessive amount of unhealthy food. And so that's something that I've learned by surrounding myself with very well-educated physicians and people like dietitians that have taught me about this. And so there were a number of people, not only in D.C., but also in New York City, where we did this screening, that had actually tested positive for type 2 diabetes, and they were not aware that they had this disorder.
What would you say to people who would argue, well, gosh, you know, your whole life has been about, you know, your knowing your body and nutrition and fitness, and you know, what does that have to do with me? You know, I sit at a keyboard all day. What can you possibly tell me?
Well, I can relate really to the everyday person, because today I am an everyday person. When I retired from the sport at 23 years old, I started living a normal life. I was no longer training the 5 to 7 hours a day in the gym for 6 days a week. And like everyone, I put on the 15 or 20 pounds during my freshman year in college. I do have a gym membership, but I am not someone that's always motivated to go to the gym. I think people assume because I did the sport of gymnastics for 18 years that I love and I'm excited about going to the gym. And no, I'm like the everyday person where I many times dread going to the gym, but I know that if I don't work out for a certain number of days a week, I'm going to feel horrible. It's not about for me anymore getting this Olympic physique that I know I'm never going to get back. At 35 years old, I look at myself in the mirror and I do see a 35-year-old body right now forming, and I love it, but I know that I need to get out not only for my physical health, but also for my emotional health. I just feel better about myself and I'm more productive, and I must say that I'm probably more enjoyable to be around when I'm working out and eating right.
Let's go back and talk about your career in gymnastics, by the way. I understand that you started at age 6, began competing at age 10, got international attention at the 1992 Olympics in Barcelona. But how did you get bitten by the bug? I mean, this is one of the things that I think a lot of people always wonder with a sport that really demands a lot of attention and commitment at a very young age. Were you pushing you, or were your parents pushing you?
Well, it was a combination of, honestly, when it comes to pushing, it was myself, because I had high expectations, but also my coach. My parents were, of course, present, but they weren't there to push me. They weren't those parents that were going to burn me out or any of my siblings out in whatever we chose to pursue. But my coach was someone that, when I set the bar at a level, she set it about 3 notches up higher.
Was it a thing where you had a kind of a natural gift, and your coach saw this and said, we need to develop this gift?
Yes.
Or was it something like you just loved the sport so much that you just wouldn't leave?
It was a combination of the both. You know, it was the talent, but at the same time, I had a passion for the sport at a very young age. I didn't want to leave the gym. If I had to leave early for whatever reason, I would be crying or upset about it. And I always wanted to get to practice on time. And so if my mom took me late, I would mope and be upset about it because I wanted to be there at the start so I didn't miss out on any opportunities to get better in the sport. There was a lot that I was fighting through, but every month when I wanted to quit, there was either a parent or my sibling or or my coach that was like, no, you have a talent in this, stick it out. And just hearing that, that kept me in the sport. And so to this day, I'm very thankful that I had a great team of people that always said the right things at the right time.
Let me just play a clip from a broadcast of your balance beam routine during the trials leading up to 1996. Here it is.
There is at this moment nothing tangible other than pride at stake for Dominique Dawes. She will be going to the Olympic Games, even if she were to fall off the rest of her routine here.
Big dismount planned in the past. She's taken out the full twist in the double summy off the beam. We'll see what she does here tonight. Oh, she went for it.
1996 was a very big. It was a fun to hear that again.
You know, it
well, you wouldn't have
was.
Heard it. You were doing your thing. You wouldn't have heard the announcers.
You know, so. I never, of course, heard the announcers, but I will say this, that I heard chatter in the audience and I would hear the cameras clicking. I was very aware of what was going on around me.
Do you have a favorite Olympic moment that you want to share?
You know, I guess in the arena, believe it or not, it's kind of odd, but my favorite Olympic moment would definitely have been my fall in the all-around competition. I know, everyone gives this odd look on their face when I say it, and let me explain. It's because I feel when you have certain mistakes or failures in life, there's always an opportunity for a lesson to be learned. And of course, at 19 years old, when I made that mistake and felt like I had disappointed all 50,000 people in the Georgia Dome and millions of people watching, I didn't take this in right away. But when I retired from the sport, I took some time to self-reflect and I figured out what went wrong at that moment. And it was good to recognize that it was an issue that I was dealing with in practice weeks, months earlier, where I did not want to work on that particular skill. And so that's something I always speak to young people about, that if you give 70 or 80% effort, you're going to get 70 or 80% outcome.
As we mentioned, you're part of the Magnificent Seven that took home the gold. And as we mentioned, you're the first female African-American gymnast to earn an individual medal. Did that mean anything to you at the time?
At the time, no. I mean, I had received fan mail back then when people actually wrote letters, when it was snail mail. But a number of African Americans were thanking me for breaking down a barrier and opening doors for other young African American girls and boys and really other people of minorities. However, I didn't get it until Halle Berry won the Oscar. And I don't remember what year it was, but I was home. I remember sitting in my living room bawling because I thought about the impact that her achievement was going to make on her race and on young people that were seeing that, oh, if she can do it, I can do it too. And then that's when the light bulb went on and I was like, oh, I get it. That's why people would come up to me and bawl and cry to me and be like, oh, thank you for all that you've done. And I never quite understood it until that moment.
What did you think they were talking about?
Well, I understood what they were talking about, but I didn't
intellectually
feel as if I had felt that moment before because I was living it. I was just doing my job. And yes, I understood that there was more diversity in the sport because of myself or other African Americans that had competed before me, but I didn't quite get the impact until I had seen the win by Halle Berry.
When you went into the arena to compete, did you feel that you were not just competing for you or for your team or for your coach or for your family, but also carrying the weight of all these African-Americans as kind of a symbol or role model?
I mean, definitely. I understood that I had a great deal of pressure on me and that I was representing not only my country and the organization, but also my race. And I have verbalized that in many of my interviews throughout the years, but I didn't quite grasp it until when Halle won the Oscar. So I did feel it, and there was a great deal of pressure. And when I made a mistake at those Olympic Games, I felt like I had not only disappointed myself, but all the people that had sacrificed so much for me, as well as the fans, because I really think that I lasted that long in the sport of gymnastics for 18 years because of the fan support that I had along the way.
So there were pluses and minuses to that pressure, because what I was going to ask you, is that fair to put so much pressure on a kid?
I don't think it was so much of a minus for me because I truly believe that's where the Lord wanted me to be. And I think he blessed me with the talents and gifts in the sport of gymnastics so that I could bless others. And he knew that I could handle the pressure that came at me.
We still don't see, though, at the top levels of the sport, the kind of diversity that many people might have expected in the wake of your achievements. Mm-hmm. And also on the men's side, Jer Lynch, for example.
Yeah.
I don't know that we're seeing another Dominique Dawes rise through the ranks.
Well, if you go to gymnastics gyms now and you look at the grassroots levels, there is definitely a great deal of diversity now in comparison to what it was like back in the 80s or let's say even the early 90s. However, there have been a number of African Americans that have represented the U.S., Betty Aquino being one at the 92 Olympic team, as you mentioned, Jair Lynch, Chaney Humphrey, Tasha Swigert. And then the Cuban American had competed at the 2004 Olympic Games. But coming up for 2012, there's a young girl. Her name is Gabby Douglas, African American. Hopefully will qualify to the Olympics. And you'll see a little bit again of diversity. And hopefully that'll continue to change.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having a Wisdom Watch conversation with three-time Olympian Dominique Dawes. There have been a number of stories in the news recently involving scandals of collegiate-level coaches who have been horribly abusive to young people within their zone. Mm-hmm. When you look at these scandals, is there something that you, as a student, a young student athlete yourself, spending a lot of time in your sport, mm-hmm. can advise parents and caregivers about how to be on alert for signs that a relationship is inappropriate?
The advice that I would give to parents, I would say to have a close relationship with the coach. If you are in a facility and the coach ignores you and does not want to communicate with you as a parent, then you should take your business and your money elsewhere. And that happens a lot of times where coaches will avoid the parents. And sometimes, you know, it might be understandable, but I really think it's important for parents to get to know the coaches and to communicate with them, and also to have that open communication with their child so that if something does occur, that their child will feel comfortable to open up to their parent. But at the same time, with these cases that have come out, there might have been the open communication, and yet the unfortunately,
the child didn't disclose, didn't say, speak in time or tell people what was going on or didn't feel he or she could stand up for herself.
Well, I think it just having that trusted environment with your child and them feeling comfortable enough to tell you all that's going on.
The other thing I wanted to get your perspective on is this whole question right now. It's mainly about, you know, football and basketball, where a number of interested people are saying that football is just dominating too much of collegiate life. But more broadly, there's been a conversation about whether student athletes really are student athletes or really whether they're semi-professionals. Mm-hmm. Do you have some advice about how you can compete at a high level without distorting the rest of your life so that if once that sport ends or if perhaps you have an injury, you don't even know who you are? Mm-hmm. It does take over your life to the point where you don't know anything else. Do you have some advice about that?
Well, I was never a student athlete, though I did get a full scholarship to Stanford, but I decided to stay in Maryland and train for two different Olympic Games after my first. But I've heard a number of stories where there are student athletes that have been told by coaches or people a part of the athletic department that you are here first and foremost for athletics, and then your education comes second. And I think that being told to young people is detrimental because it's such a small percentage of us that make it to the professional level or to the Olympic level. And if you become professional, then you do make an income from it. And so I really would hope that universities do allow these student athletes to be students first and then athletes second.
You skipped that though. You really trained full time. And what did you do? You homeschooled?
I did not homeschool. I mean, during my younger years, I was in public school. Then I went to the University of Maryland, College Park, and I was just a student. I was not doing athletics for the university because I had chosen to become a professional athlete. So I would drive from College Park to Gaithersburg to my coach's gym, train for the five to seven hours that I trained a day, and I would head back to the university. So my situation was very unique, but I would say for those young gymnasts today that are considering or contemplating going professional, make sure you have a trusted network of people, a small support system, and people that are going to advise you truthfully and not tell you maybe either what you want to hear or what sounds good. Though it worked for me, it may not work for others.
Dominique Dawes is a three-time Olympic medalist. She is now a health and nutrition advocate. She was kind enough to stop by our Washington, D.C. studios after talking about diabetes and health at Howard University. Dominique Dawes, thank you so much for speaking with us. Congratulations on everything you've accomplished.
Thank you for having me here. I appreciate it.